Okay. Hello.
Hello, everybody.
Yeah, we're back.
We are Ruth and Michelle.
Michelle, yes.
As you know, from Conscious Girlfriend. And tonight's teleclass is on how to know whether you're actually ready for a new relationship and what to do if you realize that you're not ready, how to get ready if you are not yet ready, but you're ready to get ready. So yes. We're going to be talking about that. And before we launch into that, just for those of you that don't yet know us, let us briefly say something about who we are and what we're doing here.
Okay. So, yes, I'm Michelle, and I have a background in neuroscience as well as a long Buddhist practice, and I went to seminary, and so I sort of bring the scientific and contemplative sort of threads to what we do.
And I'm Ruth, and I have a PhD in transpersonal psychology, and I do transformational spiritual work, hypnotherapy, shamanic work, and so I bring that piece. I'm also a writer. And the two of us together are Conscious Girlfriend, which is this kind of fantastical enterprise that we started
2 years ago.
Yeah. Coming up on 2 years now, and it's so cool. It's like it's the coolest thing ever. I keep being surprised every time we schedule one of these, especially now that we can see you all. And there you are, you know. So we're just sitting in our house in the middle of nowhere getting to talk to lesbians and queer women all over the world. And you get to see and talk to each other too. And we get to talk about a subject which is incredibly close to Michelle's and my hearts, and I'm guessing your hearts too, or you wouldn't be here, which is the subject of how to have more conscious relationships, how to date consciously and wisely and well, and how to create really fulfilling, lasting love, because we all want that and we deserve it. But most of us were not taught how to get there. I know I sure wasn't.
So we're doing our best to provide tools and tips and ideas and concepts to help to have conscious relationships and help you have the love that you really want.
Yeah, we've created a lot of programs and a lot of processes with tools based on neuroscience, which is really cutting edge and showing how we can actually rewire our neural circuits, and also based on psychology and, you know, conscious relationship work that has been done by other people, largely straight people. And we also use a huge amount of our own experience, you know, both the good and the bad. And the good that we use is that we have been together for, it'll be 10 years in April.
Right.
And we have a really, really great relationship, really close and really smooth and harmonious and fun. And, you know, in addition to living together and sharing our lives, we also work together on this project. So if we didn't have a good relationship,
it could be a problem.
It could be a big problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, because working together brings up all kinds of challenges and stresses. Mm-hmm. And so we make use every day of the tools that we teach. And the other thing that we make use of is our own previous relationships. We've got to mute somebody. You can't mute everybody.
Oh, it went away. Okay.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. So before this lovely relationship that we're in now, both Michelle and I had a number of really challenging relationships and really painful breakups. And that is what fuels us to do this work. And it's also what deeply informs us. And this topic that we're discussing tonight is a very personal one for me, because I know that in my past, I got into new relationships many times before I was ready. And it never worked out well. That's a mistake that I don't think Michelle actually made.
I managed to make that one. Yeah, I'm not sure why, but I didn't.
But did you think you got together with anybody before they were ready?
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. Probably. But yeah.
So.
But it's certainly something that I see quite often when we talk to women, that sort of doing the rebound thing right after a breakup to mm-hmm. just go right back into another relationship without mm-hmm. actually figuring out what happened. So
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's such an easy thing to do because, you know, we get lonely. You know, I know for me, after relationships ended, I would be lonely. I would be scared that I might never find love again. And I would be hurting and I would just want something else. It's like when you have a bad taste in your mouth and you just want to taste something else that tastes good right away to take it away. And each time I kind of knew that I was doing it, but I would sort of talk myself out of really paying attention. Mm-hmm. I'd be like, oh, you know, it's okay. It's going to be okay. And it never was. And so that's why we want to talk about this subject tonight.
And I think also just a general thing. I mean, when, for whatever reason it might be, and we're going to talk about what reasons might not be ready for a new relationship, but for whatever reasons that might be, not being ready means that you can't actually choose well.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're more likely to choose badly or very badly, to choose somebody who's not really right for you. And that's going to end up, you know, causing yet another heartbreak.
And in addition to that, I think that this is one of those things that sounds a little bit metaphysical, and I'm not sure exactly how it works, but I've seen many times, and I suspect many of you may have seen too, that somehow whatever is inside of us finds a way to show up on the outside and get reflected outside. And so I know that one way that showed up for me was that I would continuously attract women who ultimately were not fully available. You know, they were scared of the deep intimacy that I thought I was ready for. And so for a long time, my frustration was, you know, I'm ready. Why can't I find somebody else who's ready? And when I really stopped and looked more deeply, I realized, oh, it's actually because I'm not ready.
Mm-hmm.
And my fear, my ambivalence that I'm not even aware of is getting reflected outside of me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm drawing these other people that have fear or ambivalence that is more obvious to me. And they're, you know, kind of showing it fully frontally, but it was really there hidden inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you are somebody who has a pattern of, you know, kind of calling in, however that happens, calling in women that are not all the way there for intimacy, you know, there could be something else going on as well, you know, but one way or another, I would say it means you're not ready. It doesn't necessarily mean it's because you're afraid of that, but it could be. So we'll be talking more about how to identify in which ways you might or might not be ready, and then what to do about it.
Yeah. So should we start with?
Yeah. Well, let's also mention we're going to be telling you more tonight about our 12-week roadmap class. Some of you have heard about it already. It's the 12-week roadmap to conscious lesbian dating and lasting love. And, it's kind of the remedy for what ails a lot of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so tonight we're going to try to give you as much information as we can, but a lot of what we're going to be talking about may bring up for you skills that you need to develop more of, or, you know, internal healing and shifting that you need to do more of. And if that happens for any of you, the 12-week roadmap class, which we'll be starting another round of at the end of January, is going to be the best tool that we know of. And somebody is saying, I signed up for your class. Wonderful, Clara. We look forward to working with you. That's fantastic. And hopefully some more of you that are here tonight will sign up as well. It's a 12-week class. It's all online. We use an interface just like this one, actually, so you can participate from anywhere. And there's group coaching calls, there's individual coaching, there's audio and written lessons every week. It's totally hands-on. It's very experiential. So we'll be excited to tell you more about that in a little while. So
what we want to start with?
With MOVE?
Yeah. So we like acronyms, and we, as you know, and so we have a new one, and this one I like.
Last time we had an acronym Michelle didn't like, and Sid and other people were doing a really helpful job in helping us come up with alternatives. But this time we think we came up with a winner. Yeah, so we'll see what you all think.
Show you what we've got here.
So this acronym, when Michelle finds it, is MOVE. And it's a four-step process for getting ready for the relationship of your dreams. And so we'll go through each of these letters one by one, starting with the M.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the first, the M, is to make peace with the past. And let me actually, there we go. Make peace with the past, to make sure that you're over your exes and that you understand your part in whatever happened and you can forgive yourself. You know, any relationship that that had trouble and that ended in a way that was not what you wanted, you know, there's always takes two to tango. There's always two parts of the puzzle. And so understanding what your part is, what happened for you, what you brought to that situation is critical. Is really important.
And we know that those of you that are on this call tonight have had a whole range of different situations, and some of you may have lost a partner to death. And in that case, the process may be very different than if your ex left you for somebody else, mm-hmm. you know, or if the two of you just couldn't get along and it was a mutual decision, or if you left her, you know, and maybe you left her in a way that you feel good about, maybe you left her in a way you don't feel so good about. You know, there are so many ways that these things play out. And so the process of making peace is really, really individual. Mm-hmm. It's really different for each one of us in each circumstance. And yet there are commonalities that you can learn mm-hmm. and that we teach and that we go over in the roadmap class, so that whatever the specifics are that you need to do in order to make peace, you can do that.
Mm-hmm. And it could be that there's something, sometimes what happens is that there was a really, really horrific breakup like four breakups ago, and that the next ones weren't so bad, and that the thing to really look at was that one that was many breakups ago. Or sometimes it's the ones that are most important to look at are the ones that just happened. And so it will take a little bit of looking back and seeing, because sometimes also people see patterns. They say, oh, you know, wow, I did the same thing over and over and over again. And so it's looking at all the different situations and all the different patterns.
And, you know, we hear a lot about forgiveness. And should we go back so that we can see them?
Sure, yes.
They can see us. You know, and sometimes people say, do I have to forgive her? Like, I think what she did to me was really unforgivable. And sometimes that's true. You know, it really depends. I mean, some of you may feel like it's part of your spiritual practice to forgive everyone no matter what they did. And some of you may feel like, no, that was unacceptable. But either way, what we find is really crucial is to forgive yourself.
Right.
Because you are going to stay in relationship to yourself, with yourself. You can't break up with yourself. You know, you're going to be with yourself till the day you die. And so if you're walking around mad at yourself or filled with remorse or regret, it's going to nip at your heels and it's going to get in the way.
Right.
Like Michelle said earlier, it's going to prevent you from choosing somebody that really has what you want. It's going to prevent you from, you know, fully giving yourself, which mm-hmm. is actually kind of leading us into the next step of MOVE.
Yes, the next.
The O. Mm-hmm. So forgiving yourself is really key. And again, if this is something that you know that you need help with, this is something that our coaching or the 12-week class can definitely help you do.
So the O.
So the O step of the MOVE
is to open your heart to the healthy relationship you want. And that really involves, I mean, we all carry around with us, some of us from society, from our parents, from our past, beliefs that don't serve us. You know, we may think relationships mean giving ourselves up, or they mean life and death struggles.
Mm-hmm.
There's all sorts of things that we carry around, beliefs that we carry around that, you know, obviously if you carry on this belief that, you know, that being in a relationship is a life and death struggle, you're not actually going to be going into looking for a new relationship totally fully open
mm-hmm.
and totally fully ready.
Mm-hmm. One thing I've heard you talk about a lot, Michelle, is that you carried the belief that a relationship was going to mean giving yourself up.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
And you also didn't really deeply feel that you deserved
yes.
the love that you wanted.
Yes. Yeah.
And so how did that play out?
not well.
I know how it played
yes,
out, but I'm just...
I chose two partners in a row that were, one of whom was very emotionally abusive, and eventually physically abusive, and I supported her for many years, and it was, and then the second one was a little better, but still not really, because I still didn't really believe that I deserved the love that would really be right for me, and so it took me a while of really kind of cultivating that. And then I found you.
Aw. And, you know, so some of this stuff is subtle. You know, some of you watching this may be completely aware of like, yeah, there is a part of me that does not feel like I deserve love. Mm. Or, you know, there is a part of me that thinks that love is destined to be a struggle. It's destined to require sacrifices and compromises I don't want to make. And, you know, if you're aware that you have those beliefs, then I would suspect you're in a particular kind of pain because you're walking around with a very split intention.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I liken it to having one foot on the gas and one foot on the brake in
mm-hmm.
your car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you get anywhere at all, it's going to be very, very herky jerky. But some of you may feel like, you know, as far as I know, I know I'm a good person. I know I deserve love. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes these issues are more subtle, you know, mm-hmm. like there sometimes is a deep part of you that isn't in alignment with where your wiser adult self is. And this is a place where I certainly spent
mm-hmm.
time. You
mm-hmm.
know, I think for me, I was in the place where I believed I deserved love, but I also had this belief left over from my childhood that I should give three times as much as whoever I was in a relationship gave. That was somehow when I really looked into it, you know, using hypnotherapy and other healing tools, I was kind of amazed because I was like, you know, somewhere in my psyche, that was what mm. felt fair to me. And when I tried to imagine a fully 50-50 relationship, I was like, well, why would somebody want to be with me if I was only giving 50%?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I need to be giving 150% to sort of, you know, earn my keep here.
Mm.
And so it's no wonder that I ended up in relationships over and over where I felt like I wasn't being equally met, right? You know, because there's a part of me that wasn't allowing it.
Right.
And actually, ironically enough, occasionally I ended up with people that were trying really hard to give me 50% and I wasn't letting them. Because I had such a deep belief that mm. the equation was supposed to be different.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so these patterns can show up and play out in so many ways. And what we're giving you now, you know, we've got this kind of analysis of what we were both doing, and we make it sound like, oh, yeah, it's easy to just put it all into words. But, you know, it took both of us a long time
mm-hmm.
to realize
mm-hmm.
these things.
Yeah, it
right?
did. It did.
And the really important thing is that you got to learn what's running you from underneath.
Mm-hmm.
But once you do, it is actually changeable. You know, I think a lot of times we're afraid to spelunk around in our psyches because we think, uh-oh, I might not like what I find there. And, you know, the past is past. You know, I'm stuck with it. Such and such happened in my childhood. This is just how I am, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the neuroscience comes in.
Exactly. I mean, our brains are changeable. They're plastic. They can change. And so we can actually by the way that we think, the things that we say to ourselves, we can actually change that wiring. And so we can take those old beliefs and we can actually, you know, move them away. We can bring in beliefs that really do serve us, and really change our brains.
And then once you bring in the healthy beliefs, you know, part of what we help people do in the roadmap class is really get a clear vision of what a healthy relationship can be and can look like and how it can operate. Mm-hmm. And then know that you deserve it. You know, sometimes there's a big self-love, self-compassion piece that needs to be worked on there. But again, those neural pathways can be rewired. You know, for those of you that have trouble loving yourself or feeling deserving, yes, that can change. And then you can open your heart more. Oops.
What happened? What happened? Uh-oh.
Somebody is screen sharing. Okay.
Just a second here. Well, what happened here? Just a second. That wasn't supposed to happen. Let me just...
Okay. We'll be back with you in just a moment.
How did that happen?
I'm going to keep talking while Michelle figures this out.
Keep talking.
Okay. Because not all of you can see this screen anyway. So the O step of move is to really get clear on, clear up your limited beliefs, really get clear on what a healthy relationship is, and then be able to open to it, knowing that you deserve it. And
maybe if I share this for just a second.
Yes.
Okay, that's what I'm
We're stopping do. Other screen sharing. Yes. Yay.
Good okay. Job. Sorry about that.
Okay. And we're ready to move on to the V.
Yes, we are. Perfect timing.
Okay. So for those of you on the phone, you missed this whole drama. But, somebody else's screen was getting shared. Okay.
Okay.
So the V in the move.
Yes, is for vision. So, you know, in order to be ready to find the love that you really want, you have to know, as I said, know what those dreams are. Know what it is that you really want in a relationship. Know what it is you want to do or what you want the partner to be like. To really get a sense of what's right for you. What's the love that you really will really fulfill you and be right for you.
And also have a vision. You know, I think sometimes we have the kind of hazy vision of like, oh, you know, we'll just be sitting there at the kitchen table having coffee together and it'll be so loving, and oh, we'll be in bed together and it'll be so amazing.
Right.
And oh, we'll do the housework hand in hand, and you know, like we can picture all that beautiful stuff, but we also have to go beyond that in our vision and be clear on, you know, who am I and what really works for me? Because we see all the time challenges in couples where their deeply held dreams are different.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, an obvious one is a couple where one wants to have kids and the other doesn't. We run into that actually pretty frequently.
Or a couple, you know, where one person just really likes to live together, you know, spend most of her time with her partner, socialize mm-hmm. together, and the other person really like wants to spend one or two nights a week together, socialize mostly with, you know, one-on-one friends, you know, needs a lot more space. Mm-hmm. And you know, these kinds of things can be worked on, but it's really helpful if you know going in before you're trying to meet somebody or very early in the dating process, you're aware, like, this is my vision. This mm-hmm. is what really works for me. And sometimes we talk to women that say, well, you know, I'm really flexible. I could see it going a whole lot of ways. And if that's really true for you, more power to you. Mm-hmm. But it's important to make sure that it's not a flexibility that's kind of, you know, born of scarcity, where
right.
it's like, okay, I better be totally open and flexible because otherwise I might not find somebody.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because if you're coming from that place, you're likely to find somebody and not end up really being deeply fulfilled. You know, if you're not clear on what you want, there's two possibilities. One is that you'll find somebody, you know, and kind of co-create a relationship based on what she wants. Mm-hmm. And the other possibility, which I think is really common among lesbians, is that
you co-create something that neither of you wants.
Right. Because neither person is really clear, or neither person is, you know, sort of has the wherewithal to say, hey, you know, I want things this way. And so you end up co-creating this kind of mushy default thing that you're not even conscious of what you're doing and why. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you end up living together because you think that couples live together and maybe neither of you actually wants to live together, you know, or you end up doing all your socializing together because you think that's what couples do.
I think one thing is, you know, it is true. I was actually talking to somebody, two different people recently about this. There are some assumptions that we make about what coupledom means. We make some assumptions about, well, it means that you do everything together a certain way, or you do certain things, or certain things happen, right? And I was talking to somebody who's like, well, you know, what if I wanted to go away for 6 months and do an intensive program? You know, who would want to do that, right? And the truth is, a lot of women would be fine with you going off because they'd be going off and doing their thing, right? And but there's a sort of assumption that we never, that that's not what relationship means. Mm-hmm. And so there are things like that where there are assumptions about what relationships means that we pick up from society that really aren't what we want or what we need that's best for us. Mm-hmm. And so really diving in and understanding what is really works best for us is important.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that is so precious to me about our relationship and I know it's precious to both of us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's something that wouldn't work for all of you. Some of you don't want what we both want in this particular respect. But autonomy is so important to each of us.
Yes.
Right? And so we have what I think is an incredibly cool setup where, you know, in some relationships, people have to, like, or they feel like they have to ask the partner's permission, like, honey, I was thinking about seeing my friend Jane Friday night. Would that be okay with you?
Right.
You know, and, you know, we coached a woman who said, hey, I like to go away on fishing trips sometimes for a couple weeks at a time with my fishing buddies. And I'm really afraid that, you know, whoever my girlfriend is not going to be okay. You know, my fishing buddies are also women. What if she's jealous? You know, I have to give up my fishing trips to have a relationship? You know, and we've also, you've coached people who've said, how much of myself should I give up to be in a relationship?
Yes. Yeah. And my answer is always none, nothing, you know?
And somebody says a list of example options that would be fun to, I can't see the rest of that. That would be fun to think about. I never would have thought of the 6 months away from each other idea. Well, we'll give you some examples from our life.
I mean, like, I guess about 2 months ago, maybe, I said to Ruth, you know, I'm thinking about going to South Africa with my friend. And I wasn't really quite sure I was thinking about it. I didn't ask, it would be okay. I said, I'm thinking about going. And then a week later,
I said, cool.
Yeah. And a week later, I said, no, I'm going. that's an example. That's what that's.
Yeah. You know. Michelle has a friend from South Africa who invited her to go along on a trip to see her family in January for several weeks. And I think it's great. And so then I thought, well, do I want to just sit home in the rain while Michelle is off in South Africa? And I decided not so much. And so I'm going to Guatemala. And when I decided, okay, well, you know, by the time I get to Guatemala, it's going to be sunny there. It's the dry season. We're in California. We're in the rainy season here, for those of you that aren't on the West Coast. So I decided I want to stay 5 weeks. You know, I didn't think, oh, well, I can only go for 2.5 weeks because that's how long Michelle's trip is. So that's
a concrete
bigger
example.
Mm-hmm. But I think in small ways, you know, we do this all the time where, you know, like you said to me, oh, I'm thinking about going to see Star Wars with Kathy on Sunday.
Right.
You know, and then sometimes I'll say, oh, well, you know, am I invited? Would it be okay if I came?
Right.
She just assumed I wasn't going to go.
Yeah.
In this case, I actually went.
She did, yeah.
But, you know, we also have a real respect for each other's one-on-one friendships. So, actually, Kathy was my friend first. But, but, you know, if she had said, you know what, I actually just want to spend time with Kathy on Sunday, that would have been fine with me. Because we have an atmosphere of total, you know, respect and trust and... you know, we really don't have a jealous vibe between us at all.
Yeah.
And so it creates this great freedom. And that's something that I know a lot of women fear giving up when they get in a relationship.
Right. Right.
It's like, I'm going to have to ask permission for everything. I'm going to have to constrict myself. There's
all
these things I won't be able
to do. Things I want. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Everything's going to be a negotiation, a compromise. And, you know, so what we're here to say is that if you have a vision that's different from that, it's really important to know that. And then whenever you start dating, you get to say, hey, this is my vision. What's your vision? Are we on the same page here? Or are our visions at least similar enough that we can work with them?
Right. Yeah.
Because whatever your vision is, you know, we're not here to tell you what it should be. We're just here to help you get to it, help you embody it. And that's really what the next step of MOVE is.
And I think, just before we say that also, I think there is the question of, and this might be go actually to a little bit of the O step, but, you know, oh, this is what I want, and do I deserve this amazing relationship that I can envision? You know, so it's this vision piece and also being willing to say, oh yeah, I can really, yes, I deserve this. I can have this relationship.
Somebody says, can you put the screen up again with the acronym? Yeah. Let's go back to the whole acronym.
Okay.
It's so great how Michelle does all the techie stuff. She makes it easy for me, but it's not so great because I don't know how to do it sometimes because she just does it. Yeah. And so one more thing I wanted to say about V2 is something that we really encourage for all of you that are part of our Conscious Girlfriend community is incorporating in your vision how you want to work with communication and how you want to work with conflict when it comes up. We really advocate having a vision that includes conscious communication and self-awareness and using the kinds of tools that we teach. Some of you have been to lots of our classes, so you've heard all about our SCORE process for healing conflict and our CATCH process for identifying who's really a good catch and making sure you're a good catch, and our SHARE process for having emotional intimacy. You know, we have all these acronyms and all these tools that we teach and processes. We're not going to go over all of them tonight. But we recommend that there be this kind of shared language and vision between you and whoever you get together with. And so again, in order for that to exist, you've got to know, okay, you know, this is how I'm hoping to do things. And then you can say, hey, you know, is this a ride you're up for? It's like we have a somebody that we've been working with for a while who's taken some of our classes who just met somebody and started dating. And she told this woman all about Conscious Girlfriend. And this woman was really intrigued and enthusiastic, you know. So you can do that. You can have that vision and then share it.
So E.
Okay.
Yeah, that's so this is about ensuring that you have the skills to embody your vision. So you have this vision, but you have to have the skills to make it real. And, you know, for example, you know, if you want healthy communication, how do you do that? What skills do you need to have healthy communication? What skills do you need to heal conflict, to build intimacy?
And, you know, as part of this class, recognizing if you're not ready tonight, some of you may be saying, well, of course I want healthy communication. I don't think I've ever heard somebody say, I want unhealthy communication in my next relationship, you know, but the question is, can you show up for your part of the healthy communication? Can you do at least 50% of the healthy communication? You know, because the healthy communication is both speaking in clean ways without blame or self-blame. It's knowing how to not speak from a triggered place when when your triggers come up. It's you know, having something that you do like our SCORE process so that you're not just blurting stuff out. Boy, this is a big mistake I used to make all the time. I would speak from a triggered place all the time, and it would always create, you know, either a fight or this endless processing loop, you know. So so on the speaking end, it's knowing that you can speak cleanly and you can speak from an untriggered place.
And then on the listening end, it's about knowing that you can listen without your habitual filters of maybe you habitually hear criticism where there isn't any, or maybe you react defensively that kind of thing. So it's listening cleanly. And also, for me, the being triggered part was that, well, the part was I didn't know really what I was feeling, and I would shut down when I got triggered as opposed to speaking. Mm-hmm. And so part of it, part of communication too, is being able to deal with that trigger and then be able to speak in a way that's self-responsible and that reflects what you're feeling, what mm-hmm. you're really feeling.
Mm-hmm. And the really great thing about readiness, and again, why we're emphasizing readiness, is that, you know, you can't have a great relationship all by yourself. I mean, it really helps a lot to have a partner who is on the same page. But I would say if you're prepared to show up and do 75% of the healthy communication, hopefully she comes back with the 75% on your end, then you have 150% healthy right. communication.
Right.
And where this is important is that, you know, we all do get triggered. And if you have the skills to listen to what she says and notice where it triggers you and then, you know, dismantle that before responding, you're going to be able to make things a lot healthier on your own, mm-hmm. you know, and this mm-hmm. is something that, we both do so many times a day. Mm-hmm. It's become automatic, so we don't right. even think about it,
right.
but sometimes we bring our attention to it because it's interesting to us and because we mm-hmm. teach this stuff. So we're like, oh yeah, yeah, wow. I noticed myself going to this place inside and then catching myself. And that's a great example right. that we can use yes. in our next class.
Yeah. So we had a couple of comments or questions. So one woman said, is there between asking permission and courtesy? If you're in a committed relationship, treating with respect and love, and ask one another about the big things. And, you know, this is, again, I think what we said is this is not for everybody,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, we have tons of respect and love and mm-hmm. it's and courtesy, but it's just for us personally, the autonomy is really, is something that we really value.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's something that we, mm-hmm. That's a priority for us, but it's not what's true for everybody.
Right. No, I think it's totally fine to create whatever kind of agreement feels good between
exactly.
you and
exactly.
your partner.
Exactly.
So, and by the way, I mean, the conversation was, I'm thinking about going away in a couple months. I think if she had said, I'm going away for 2 months next week,
right.
I would have been a little, you
yes.
know, it would have been
yeah.
okay,
yeah.
but I would have been a little taken aback.
Yeah.
Wow, there's a lot to get used to all of a sudden. But anyway, yeah, however these things get negotiated, you know, one thing that I would say, though, just to call your attention to the use of the word courtesy, is that sometimes we have preferences, and it's fine to have whatever your preference yeah. is, but when you say this is courtesy, it's making a judgment, mm-hmm. like this is mm-hmm. the right way to do it.
Right.
And so what I would suggest is that it's going to be cleaner, and it's ultimately probably going to have better results if you can own your preference and mm-hmm. say, this is really what I'm more comfortable with. This
yes.
is really how I would like it to be.
Yes.
Rather than saying, this is what's courteous.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I agree. Yeah. And then, there's a technical problem.
Somebody says, I would happily expose my face, but FaceTime kicked me out. I don't have a camera on my computer.
Yeah.
Love seeing, would also enjoy being seen.
Don't.
Okay. I'm sorry about that, Vicky.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I don't know that I can do about that.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything we can do about it, unfortunately.
Yeah,
so, sorry about that.
But I do really appreciate those of you that are letting us see your faces and
yeah.
see each other's faces. It's
yeah.
really builds that sense of community.
Mm-hmm. So back to the E, mm-hmm. back to skills. So I think, I think sometimes we don't know whether we have enough. You know, we're not clear. Maybe, you know, we thought that we communicated okay before, but we're not sure what, you know, and there are some very clear guidelines. So for instance, you talked about the percentages. There's research that shows that for every negative interaction that you have in a relationship, there need to be five positive reactions. So five positive interactions, like whether appreciations or five positive interactions that you have to counteract that one negative.
And so like if I say, Michelle, did you leave all that dirty stuff on the counter again?
Right.
I need to say five positive things.
Right.
Yes. And of course, it's better if I can avoid just saying the negative thing at all and have even more positive interactions right. in the bank, right. you know, but yeah, each critical or, you know, charged or, you know, tense interaction needs to be counteracted with 5 positive interactions in order for the relationship to continue to feel good. And
that's because the negative interactions have a larger effect on the brain than the positive ones do. And so, you know, sort of back to that sort of idea of the brain changing, you're actually, if you're speaking to your partner in a negative way, in a constant way, you're actually changing her brain as yeah. well as your own.
Right, right.
In a not so good way.
So these are, again, these are things that we go over in the 12-week roadmap class. We spend a number of weeks on healthy communication skills, on what we call clean listening and clean speech, so that you're not speaking with blame or self-blame, and you're also not hearing blame mm-hmm. When it's not there. And even if there is a little bit of it there, if you're able to dismantle your triggers, then you're going to be that much further mm-hmm. ahead of the game. Again, for anybody who's listening, who's like, wow, you know, this is making me realize that I need some help here. There is that help available for you in the 12-week class. Mm-hmm. So let's see. Somebody says, are those same skills covered at all in your book? Yes, they absolutely are. Mm-hmm. We talk about almost all of this stuff in the book. We don't have the MOVE acronym because we just came up with that today.
Right.
We're continually coming up with new stuff. The clean listening and clean speech and the SCORE process for healing conflict and getting untriggered is absolutely in the book. So we highly recommend the book. It is the cheapest way, for sure, to, you know, short of these free teleclasses, it's the cheapest way to get 280 pages of this material, you know, in your hands. But what the 12-week class does is give you an experiential process where week by week we're walking you through exercises and practices and, you know, coaching you when stumbling blocks come up, and you have a community that you're sharing the process with, and you get a one-on-one hour of coaching. And so it's much more hands-on. Mm-hmm. So for those of you that want more, you know, support in developing these skills and readiness, that's where we would recommend the 12-week class.
So someone asked, I've gone through the partner saying negative things and not making up for them even when asked to.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and the thing is, it's not, you can't really make up for, I mean, it's hard to make up for a lot of negative comments. I mean, it's, you know, you, even though you can counteract it, it still has a corrosive effect. And so you really do want to try to, you know, yeah, the 5-to-1 ratio is there, but you really do, because if it's like 50 times a day, well, you can't possibly put in 250, you know, sort of positive interactions. But it's also just, it's the more negative there is at all, the more corrosive it is to the relationship.
But what we recommend focusing on is yourself.
Yes.
You know, I'm guessing that many of you on tonight are single, maybe most of you, maybe some of you are not. But for those of you that are single, it's a fantastic time to look at what you're bringing to the table, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know, and what you, if you were to find the woman of your dreams tomorrow and get into a relationship tomorrow, are you ready? Mm-hmm. You know, are you really open to the kind of love you want? Are mm-hmm. you clear about what that's going to look like? Do you
right.
have the skills to bring it into being?
Right.
Have you made peace with the past? You know, all of those kinds of things. Because sometimes it's easy to point the finger, at other people. And again, this is not really a pattern that Michelle has, mm-hmm. but this is a pattern that I have. I have had to learn over and over again. There's a great somatic exercise that our mentors, Gay and Kathleen Hendricks, teach, which is, you know, if you're pointing the finger at somebody else, those of you that are on screen, you can see it, and then you slowly turn the finger around and point it toward your own chest and look at, what am I bringing? So for whoever asked that question, it's like, okay, my partner was saying all these negative things and not making up for them even when I asked her to, but what was I doing? Was I ever saying negative things? How much positive input was I giving her? How was I contributing to this dynamic?
How was I handling my triggers?
Mm-hmm. And sometimes you might have been with somebody where, you know, no matter how skillful you were, she was just going to be unskillful. Mm-hmm. She was, you know, like Michelle's partner that was criticizing mm-hmm. You know, constantly.
Constantly.
Right?
Yeah. I don't think there was a lot I could have done. I mean, there's a lot I could have done for myself, but I'm not sure there's a lot I could have done to change that dynamic.
Mm-hmm. And so if that's the case for you, you know, if you have a past relationship that you're still hurting from or angry about, then we would recommend that you go through some processes with the M step of mm-hmm. of move, because, you know, it may never be okay with you what she did, but you need to make peace with the fact that that happened. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, maybe it was just because you weren't clear, or you didn't know you deserved better, or you didn't know how to watch out for red flags. You know, you weren't consciously dating, but for whatever reason, you did get yourself into that relationship and you did stay for as long as you stayed. And you know, you need to both understand why that happened and forgive yourself. And that's how you can get ready to do it differently, because otherwise, you know, we end up walking into new relationships. And again, I speak from experience, like this little, you know, half covered up pile of landmines where it's like, you know, I've got this wound from this relationship and this wound from that relationship. And the minute that you do something that reminds me
right.
of that, one of those wounds, I'm mm-hmm. going to be like, rah, 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 mm-hmm. you know, that's what happens when we're not ready, when we haven't gone through these steps.
Mm-hmm.
So,
should we talk about the class?
Or well, we kind of have.
Oh, yes,
yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So let's open it up
yeah,
for questions.
Let's take questions. Let's
yeah.
take questions.
So you can chat your questions, or you can unmute yourself.
Yeah.
If
mm-hmm.
you're on the computer, you just hit the little icon in the lower left corner of your screen, and if you're on the phone, it's *6.
*6
to unmute yourself.
Yeah.
And somebody.
Yes, we're happy to take questions.
Somebody's questions. Raising their hand. Great.
Yes.
I think
that
was me.
Susan, yeah.
Yes. I had a question, because I'm not sure if this is common or uncommon, but at one time I was interested in trying to have a relationship or looking for one, or there was just kind of this emptiness. And so before trying to actually do that, I thought maybe some deep introspection was a good idea, and I took mm-hmm. a nonviolent class to even make sure that my words were not having an agenda or something mm-hmm. loaded behind them, or something that I thought I heard that was really mother speaking in my mind, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And started doing some, learning some Buddhist meditation, Zen meditation on the weekends. And by the time I got, felt really, really good, and it was about a year and a half of really doing a lot of reading, a lot of Eckhart Tolle. I don't really feel the need anymore. Is that weird? I mean, I feel just fine to have a relationship.
Oh,
that happiness that was there really wasn't about somebody else. It was about me.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know that. So I just don't have that need. I'm really very happy the way things are. And then I think that, do I really want it to stay that way? Or did I just not go far enough in my learning? Or have you ever heard of that happening?
Yeah, actually, it's a particular phenomenon. But I love what you're saying. I mean, what you did with that feeling of emptiness inside was so self-responsible and so wise. And I love all the mm-hmm. particular resources that you drew on. You know, they're resources that we use too. So it's really cool. And I suspect that if you hadn't done those things and you had found a relationship at that point, it wouldn't have gone that well, because you were trying to fill that empty place with the wrong thing. And I did that many times. So, you know, I've made so many mistakes in the past. But it sounds like right now you're in a place where you're not feeling empty. You're actually feeling good. You're feeling peaceful. That's fantastic.
I'm just really grateful for everything. I just don't have that emptiness anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's wonderful.
That's wonderful. And sometimes people get to that place and then there's a little bit of a fear of like, oh, well, now I'm at a state of equilibrium. And if I get involved with somebody or even start dating, it might disrupt the equilibrium.
I thought that.
Yeah. So in that case, there may be potentially some more work for you to do so that you really feel clear inside of like, hey, I am strong enough to handle, you know, it's like here I am sailing along on a completely smooth body of water, but even if some waves came up, I'm a good enough sailor to be able to handle that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that might be a place you want to go, or it might not. The other thing.
I think
so. Mm-hmm.
So I've had history of giving too much in a relationship, and so mm-hmm. I'm very protective of how I feel in the work that I've done now. So I want to make sure that I'm very careful if I do mm-hmm. something like mm-hmm. that I honor myself first.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That's a great clarity to have.
Yeah.
And I think the other side, which is something that we talk about in the 12-week class, you know, when we talk in the very first week, actually, about what is a healthy relationship is, you know, I think many of us have gotten into relationships because we're lonely or because we felt empty or because life doesn't feel meaningful without that other special someone. But there's another whole side, potentially, which is like the way that a relationship stretches us and enriches our lives and helps us grow. And, you know, there's like a whole other set of much healthier potential motivations mm-hmm. for having a partnership. Now, of course, it's not the only way to enrich your life and grow. So we're not here to tell anybody that, you know, you should want a relationship. It's totally up to you. But if any part of the resistance is due to fear, like I don't want to get back in there and overgive, then it sounds like you can use all these great tools that you've already been working with, or some of the ones that we offer, to just keep on like, hey, I can take care of myself now and I can be aware enough that if I start overgiving, I can notice that I'm doing it. I can stop. I can go back into whatever place inside me that's coming from and, you know, work to heal that mm-hmm. or, you know, just work to change my behavior, you know, all of that kind of stuff. How is that sitting with you?
Very good. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Great. Can I get
you? Mm-hmm.
Hello. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. I haven't had a relationship yet. And I'm a little frightened to go to lesbian events, even though I've been a lesbian forever. My thing is I fall in love with straight women, and that doesn't ever end well. Mm-hmm. So how do I deal with that? Because, I mean, they're just, you know, the saying is you can't help who you fall in love with, but I don't want to fall in love with straight women.
Well,
you
actually can help who you fall in love with to some extent. I think that one of the things that people often say is, well, I keep attracting a certain kind of woman. Maybe you keep attracting straight women, but it's not about who you attract. It's about who you choose.
Well, you can't choose who you're attracted to.
Right.
You know, if there's this woman that walks through the room and your head just swivels to follow her, mm-hmm. you know, you can't choose that, but you can choose what you do after that.
Exactly. Yeah. So what choices you make is what you have control over. And so if you are noticing, I think what happens oftentimes is for lesbians is we do go for that attraction and we sort of leave everything else sort of behind. And what we have to mm-hmm. do actually is to really be conscious about it. It's like, well, okay, who is this person? And is this person, can I actually have the relationship that I want with this person? Can I have mm-hmm. that vision with this person? Is that possible? Mm-hmm. Do they have, I mean, obviously if they're straight,
it's not a good idea. Right. You don't even assess them for all the rest of the criteria that we would recommend assessing for, because
I mean, unless it's a woman who says, hey, I've been straight up to now, but I really think I'm a lesbian. You know, it's as you know, it's not going to go well. And so, you know, one thing that I would say is to really look at your sense of self-worth and self-love. Mm-hmm. And like, you really know through and through that you deserve to be with somebody that's just as into you as you are into her. Like, and does that, do you feel like if you kind of, you know, explore the image of that in your body, does that feel safe to you? Like, yeah, I'm on board. I'm on board to be with somebody who's fully into this. Or is there some part of you that notices, oh, I have some fear about that? You know, because sometimes this pattern, like for me, it didn't show up in terms of being attracted to straight women, but it did show up in terms of being attracted to women that were not completely available in some other way. So I would suggest really looking at those things within yourself, you know, the self-worth, the beliefs about relationship, you know, and then realizing, hey, even if I get attracted to somebody straight, you know, even if it feels like my heart just jumped out of my chest and I want to follow it, instead of doing that, I'm going to pick my heart back up and put it right back into my chest and look for somebody who is, you know, the right kind of partner for me.
Exactly.
So you do have the power to do that.
How do you meet other lesbians? I mean, I haven't formed a social group yet.
Well, there's lots of ways, and we actually talk about this in the class. You know, there's the sort of organic way where it's friends or events. There's Meetup, which is a way that a lot of women meet each other. There's online dating sites and that sort of thing. So there's lots of different ways, lots of strategies.
Yeah. One thing we hear a lot about from women is that a lot of the older ways that women used to use, like lesbian bars and women's bookstores, there were really not many of them anymore. But I think that meetup groups, if you live in a place with a large enough lesbian population to actually have some, you know, lesbian hiking groups or lesbian social groups, those can be great. And we're actually big advocates as well of meeting women online. Although we think that it has some real pitfalls, some pros and cons, some things to watch out for. We also think it can be really amazing. I mean, we're biased because we met that way. We actually met through Michelle's Craigslist ad, believe it or not.
Yes.
It's kind of a miracle. But what we love about online dating, I mean, online dating is sort of a misnomer because you don't really do the dating online,
right,
but you find the woman online, is that you get to spell out in your profile who you are and what your vision is, what you're looking for, you know, and then you get to screen other women according to their profiles. And so there's so much information, relevant information,
yeah,
that you get
right
to
there.
Both share and receive, which if you're just looking at somebody across the room, you don't get that information. You only get the information of how cute she is, which, you know, it's cute is as cute does, right? You know, it does, it's nice, but it doesn't really take us that far. So that's why we really like online dating if you use it wisely. A lot in the class and also in our book about how to do online dating wisely and what some of the cautions are and what our recommendations are. And somebody asked for the name of the book. Oh, and somebody else
somebody
gave
answered.
It.
Thank you. So
it's actually Conscious Lesbian Dating and Love. It's on Amazon. Thank you, Megan.
How much does the class cost?
The class is $597 for the 12-week class. And for those of you that are on the teleclass tonight, we do give you a discount, a $100 discount. So it brings it down to $497.
If you use the coupon code teleclass, it's actually the coupon code.
Yeah. So the URL to sign up is,
yes,
we can actually chat it to you or share
we'll
the screen.
We'll share the screen.
Cool. It's conscious girlfriend.com/roadmap.
Thank you, Michelle, for doing that. So you can go to that URL and sign up. For those of you that want a payment plan, you can make three payments. We do offer scholarships, but the scholarships are all taken already for the January class. But if you absolutely can't afford it, but you're really motivated, you really want to take it, email us and we can put you on the scholarship list for the May class. Because we're going to be, we do the roadmap three times a year. So we start it in January, May, and September. So, and the book is, like I said, the book's a lot cheaper. It's not as experiential, but the book is $20 for the print version or $10 for the Kindle version. So, you know, hopefully that's affordable for everybody. If there's anybody listening tonight that can't afford that, email us and we will email you a PDF of the book for free. So we definitely want that to be in everybody's hands.
And so someone asked how many people are in, usually in each class, and it's the class is limited to 25, and we expect that to be the number.
We usually fill up, but we keep it to 25 so that we can all kind of get to know each other, because we do 14 hours of these group coaching calls, so it's pretty intimate. And there was another comment on the screen.
Oh, I just want to thank you for answering my question, and I want other people to have a chance to ask too. Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
thanks.
I'll meet you. Continue back to the chat. Okay. If one is dealing with chronic or acute health issues, would you say that this rules out dating until they stabilize? What if the person feels emotionally ready but is afraid that being in a weakened physical state may severely limit her options? That's a great question. And we get that question a lot, actually.
We do. And I think the answer is that you do what you want, that you really want to do, what really makes sense to you. I mean, I think that a lot of us deal with chronic health issues of one type or another. And, you know, being clear about what's going on for you, being upfront, being honest is important. But if you feel like you can do it, if you feel ready to do it and you feel like you can do it, then I think, you know.
Well, and I think that, you know, when we're over a certain age, whatever that age is, you know, we all have chronic health issues, you know, and some, for some of us, they start earlier in life, you know, but at a certain point, we all have them. So I would never want to say if you have chronic health issues, that excludes you from being able to date. Now, if it's an acute health issue, depending on how acute it is, how serious it is, maybe it's going to take all of your attention to deal with for a little while. But I frankly think that love is one of the most powerful forces there is for, you know, for supporting us and for helping our health. I agree with Michelle. It's really important to be honest, you know. So if, let's say, you're dealing with cancer or, you know, something else really serious, I would put that right up front. Like if you've got an online dating profile, I would put that right up front. And you know, yes, it'll scare some people away, but, you know, it's something that people need to know. And I wouldn't put that as the only thing on the profile, like, hello, I have cancer, do you want to date me? You know, I would put a whole bunch about who you are and, you know, what matters to you and the kind of life you're living. And then a few paragraphs in, I'd say, and I was diagnosed with cancer several months ago, and this is the process I'm in. And, you know, I'm aware that might be scary to some women, but I still really feel like I have a lot of love to give and receive. And I know, you know, everybody's different. We would respect whatever, you know, each of your stance is. Somebody says, I want to believe that we're eminently lovable, even if we're not perfectly able, and that love is a superpower.
Exactly. Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. And so, you know, if you're reading the online ads and you see that somebody has a health issue and you're like, uh-oh, I'm not going to answer, you know, it's your prerogative. But I've been in relationships with people with lots of serious health issues now in my life, starting when I was in my 30s and I donated a kidney to my partner that went into kidney failure. So this is something I have a lot of experience with. And, you know, a lot of it was really hard, but I wouldn't trade it. You know, I do not
regret. I don't regret that. And when I first met Michelle, she was kind of scared to tell me that actually, you know, it had taken her a few days to answer my response to her ad because she actually had been in the hospital with
acute pancreatitis.
Acute pancreatitis. And so, you know, it took her a few weeks to tell me, like, I was in the hospital when you wrote to me. And she was afraid that it was going to scare me away. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, you know, what the possibilities between us mm-hmm. are more important than that.
Yeah.
And, you know, as it turned out, I ended up developing some health issues of my own. So, you know, as I said, it happens to all of us eventually.
So there's another chat question.
Somebody says, every time I look at women online, they all seem like they are uber athletes. All their photos are parasailing, mountain climbing, etc. I have some health issues that keep me grounded sometimes, and I tend to like a quieter life and pursuits, but I feel like no one wants that. Classic introvert bookworm. Okay. I think there's lots of women that want that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's lots of women that want that, for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, if you're looking online, you can even use search terms. When I was looking online reading ads, I would always use the search term spiritual because that's something that was really important to me. And that would eliminate 95% of the ads. And that's how I found Michelle.
Yeah.
Because she was in that remaining 5%. You know, so if you're an introvert, try the search term introvert. Mm-hmm. Try the search term bookworm. You never know what's going to come up.
Or try homebody the search term.
Homebody or reading or there are lots of women, you know, like if you had some kind of really, really esoteric thing that you like to do, like, I don't know, juggling on a rowboat and you were looking for somebody else that liked to do that, you know, it might be a little harder to find, but introverted bookworm, there's lots of
there's
us.
Lots of us.
That should be doable.
Yeah.
Okay. Was there another question?
Another question. Somebody said bookworms rule. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Some of those profiles are more aspirational.
Yeah.
That's funny. But this is an example of where it's really important to be clear on your vision. Mm-hmm. Because I remember we were coaching somebody else who said, I'm a couch potato and I always get together with the women that want to, you know, go out to events 5 nights a week. And it is important to know mm-hmm. what's true about yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't have to have all the same interests, for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is why Michelle thought I wasn't going to want to go to Star Wars, because she's a big sci-fi person and a mm-hmm. movie buff, and I'm not so much. So that's fine. There's room mm-hmm. for that. But you do have to have, you know, some lifestyle things in common, for mm-hmm. sure. So you got to look for that. That's great. Somebody says, I have a friend who's an adrenaline junkie, and she complains all the women she meets are too mellow.
That's funny.
So,
Yeah,
mellow. That would be another interesting keyword search or low key.
Yeah. Do you really believe that relationships can be mistakes or bad choices? Mm. I prefer to believe there are no bad choices or mistakes. Lessons in love should not be mistakes. You know, it really depends. Yes and no. I mean, I do think I absolutely have learned so much from every relationship that I've been in. Even the ones that were really, really difficult. And although the truth be told, I would have rather not done it. I mean, I think looking back, especially on my 9-year abusive relationship, I would have rather not done it. I learned a ton.
It cost you a lot of money, too.
It cost me a lot of money. It cost me all sorts of things, right? And so, that's not to say that I think you can learn from everything and anything. And it's totally... it's, you know, everything is fodder for growth and learning, but I think there is a point at which you want to stop making those mistakes so that you can.
Or it's a question of, do you want to keep playing it out in the same way? Mm. You know, mm-hmm. like I think we have a profound choice that we get to make about how we view the past.
Yes.
And, I agree with the questioner, like, I like to look at everything that happened in the past as being worthwhile because I learned from it.
Mm-hmm.
But some of those things I don't want to do again. You know, it's like I did it once. You know, I've been there. I want to learn the lesson and move on mm-hmm. and learn a different mm-hmm. lesson the next time.
So that's really what we're talking about. You know, so if you don't resonate with the language about not making the same mistakes again, you know, you can just substitute whatever works for you, like, you know, playing it out differently next mm-hmm. time, you know, like.
And we do talk to some women, especially women who are younger, who, you know, they want to explore, they want to learn, they want to figure out what's out there, and they want to just sort of jump around and try different things. And that's fabulous. And I, you know, I mean, it's fun to be that young, right? Mm-hmm. I think as you get older, that looks less exciting.
And, you know, maybe not. Maybe it's the opposite. You know, maybe you're 60 and you were in a 30-year relationship, mm-hmm. and now is mm-hmm. your time to run around and explore.
Right.
You know, it's just about knowing what's true for you and then finding somebody else who is yes. on a compatible page. Mm-hmm. Okay, somebody says, I don't feel ready to date because I'm in the worst financial situation of my life. My friends encourage me to get out and that I deserve love, but I don't want to be a burden on anyone. I also fear that like attracts like, so I'm afraid I'll attract someone who's just as bad off financially or worse. I'm currently working on my situation and believe that I will dig myself out of this mess, but it may take years. I'm not a gold digger, nor am I looking for a sugar mama, and I hate power inequities. Is this a common issue among lesbians? Great
question.
That's
a really great question.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that question.
So, I think what I would say about that is that it is important to be at a basic level of being able to take care of yourself, support yourself, in order to find a healthy relationship. If you're not able to, you know, pay your own rent or get food in your mouth, I would say that that needs to be a higher priority mm-hmm. than looking for love. Beyond that, you know, we talk to women that have a whole range of priorities. You know, some of the women that we work with are fairly well off and they're very clear. Okay, I want to find somebody else who's similarly fairly well off because I want to travel the world and stay in, you know, 4 or 5 star places and I want her to pay her own way. But many of the women that we talk to say, what matters to me is just that she is self-sufficient, whatever that looks like. Mm-hmm. And personally, that's the standard that I hold. You know, so I would say you don't have to have a big savings account. You don't have to own a house. You know, you don't have to have a new car. But I do think that to start out a relationship when you're not self-sufficient at the basic level would not be such a great idea. What do you think about
that?
No,
I totally agree with that. I think that's a good, getting yourself to that self-sustainableness is a first priority. But once you're there, I think it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to lots of women who have, you know, who have pretty substantial, they're pretty comfortable and for them, the income or the assets don't matter at all.
Mm-hmm.
They're as long as somebody's self-sustainable, they really don't care.
And again, it's something that it's important to be really clear about. But I love how clear you were mm-hmm. that, you know, you're not looking for a sugar mama. You don't want to be dependent on somebody. That's a really healthy, self-responsible
yes.
stance to take.
Yep.
So, I mean, I wish we lived in a society where mm-hmm. we all got taken care of.
Yeah.
You know, it's the economy is really difficult in this country. And, you know, assuming you're in the U.S. or wherever you might be. And, you know, I wish it were easier, but it is the way it is. So I do think that basic self-sufficiency is a good place to start. You know, and that said, we have women that we work with that are on fixed incomes, you know, on disability, Social Security. And I think creatively there are lots of ways to live a good life mm-hmm. on a very limited income. So... Okay.
Yeah. Other questions? Either by chat or you can unmute yourself and ask. If you're on a phone, it's *6. Hello.
I'm self-sustainable, but not where I want to be. Okay.
Yeah.
Great. So
yeah.
I'd say if you're self-sustainable, just be honest about, hey, I'm self-sustainable, but I'm not where I want to be economically,
right.
but I'm working on it.
Right.
You can say that to people
exactly.
that you date.
Yep.
Yeah.
So was there somebody unmuted themselves? I thought I heard a voice.
Okay.
So yes.
So
ask away.
star 6 on a phone or little unmute icon in the corner of your screen on the computer. Do you have special advice for couples from different racial, ethnic, class backgrounds? Okay, great question.
That's a great question.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, clearly you can see that we have different racial backgrounds.
Uh-huh, those of you that can see us.
And yes, obviously. And I think what's really important about that is that each of you is willing to understand and really kind of grok, embrace that the experience of the other person is going to be different. You know, Ruth knows that when I'm walking out in the world, my experience of the world is different than hers. And she's willing to know that and embrace that and listen to me when I talk about my experience in the world. I think that's true for class as well, that we really are able to understand and know, oh, our experiences in the world because of who we are is different.
Mm-hmm. And I actually believe that, you know, race and class and gender presentation are some of the big obvious things that make our experience different. But each of us is our own universe. You know,
yes.
Even if the two of you look very similar in your gender presentation and your class and your ethnic background, you could still experience the world quite differently. There might have been all kinds of things that were quite different in your families. Even if your families were similar on the outside, mm-hmm. you might have developed, you know, the two of you might have developed opposite coping strategies.
Right.
That often happens. So what we say is that curiosity and compassion are both really key for healthy relationships. And I think whether you're of different racial backgrounds, class backgrounds, or the same, you need curiosity and compassion either way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's,
yeah,
that's kind of, you know, by saying that, I'm not trying to, push under the rug the very real differences that can be there because of race or class, but we do kind of hold it in a larger context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That, I'm Jewish and Michelle's not. There are some differences there too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, it's like there's
yes.
You know, I'm short and she's tall. She has
right.
no idea what it is like to walk through the world as a 4'10" person, you know?
It's true.
I'm continually having to educate her about that.
Yeah. So
okay.
Yeah. So what about people who come with preformed family? Is a relationship most important or is this negotiable? What is most healthy? So I'm imagining you're meaning by preformed that you have children from another relationship. I'm imagining that's what you're talking about. Correct me if I'm wrong in the chat. And the truth is children are almost always, I mean, always maybe the first priority. I mean, that's their children.
They actually should be.
They
the
should
first
be
priority.
And
yeah.
So yeah, and so that's I think, and that's something that somebody who's maybe the person who doesn't have the kids coming into that has to really be aware that the kids are the priority and have to be and need to be. It's important. So I think that's so it's not the relationship actually shouldn't be most important. The kids should be most important.
Mm-hmm.
And for many women who are entering into relationships with women with kids, they want that. They want a family. They want to focus on the children. They want to help raise the kids. And so that's, you know, something mm-hmm. to talk about. If you're somebody who has kids, it's important that be part of your vision of what you're looking for. And you may not be looking for a co-parent. You may want somebody who's sort of in the, you know, you see on the weekends or when the kids are with the other, you know, their other parent or whatever. But you really want to make sure that you're clear about the role of that person in your family. In your family life.
Mm-hmm. And of course it could be a different preformed family relationship, you know, and we have friends who are taking care of one of the partner's aged mother. She lives with them half the year and she has been for 11 years and it's a very challenging situation. You know, so there's all those kinds of situations mm-hmm. too. I think, you know, in a way, I don't want to define what is most healthy. I think that what's important is for people to be upfront and clear about, you know, what is my situation? What
yes.
are my hopes? What are my yeah. expectations? What are yours? What kind of ride are you on board for? You know, I think when we said the kids should be most important, we're not saying, you know, therefore the partner's needs don't count.
Right.
But child raising is a really sacred, important obligation. I guess is our point there. But, you know, within that, of course, there is negotiation about how that happens and what that looks like. So again, I think it's really just, you know, just as we were talking about before, about how we navigate things around trips, mm-hmm. that might not be how you would want to navigate it.
Right.
It's like how you navigate things around your preformed family, you know, what your commitments are. And then looking for somebody who's good with that. Okay.
So,
Sarah.
So I'm good at being excited at the beginning of a relationship and looking for the good in the woman I'm dating. I'm not so good at putting the work in the long term to keep the relationship strong. I can also become disenchanted with someone over time. I forget to appreciate all the qualities that drew me to the woman in the first place. Are there any underlying issues?
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. Great question. So where do you want to go with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of things. I mean, it's at the beginning of a relationship, there's a phenomenon that we talk a lot about called limerence. And that's when your brain chemicals are pumping out all sorts of wonderful, there's lots of wonderful brain chemicals, endogenous opiates, that's your internal heroin, and oxytocin, and you're literally stoned. And it's a biological response that is designed to help us have babies, even though we can't.
Designed to make us mate and keep mating long enough to make a baby.
Right. And so it inevitably fades. It only lasts for 3-6 months, at the outside a year. And so I think it's common that women are like, oh, everything was so wonderful. This is so amazing. Mm-hmm. It's because it's fueled by these brain chemicals.
And there's a natural curve, I think, where we start out really high because of limerence. And even if we're aware that, oh, this is the honeymoon and it won't last, it kind of feels like it will. And then at a certain point, there is either a gradual descent or sometimes a plummet where it's like, okay, reality has hit, you know, This is how she is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of relationship experts say that in a way that's when the real love begins, because what there was before was the infatuation and the fantasy and the projection and, you know, now I've finally found the one who's going to meet my needs or, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, I think your question was very self-aware. It's great that you're aware of this tendency mm-hmm. to kind of get disenchanted, and you're also aware that you're not doing everything that you could to keep reminding yourself of what drew you to the woman in the first place.
And I think there's a piece too about being really good at choosing well, being really good at knowing that this woman that you're getting to know early on, you know, has the skills, has a compatible relationship vision with you, is really someone who you can go the long haul with.
Right. Being self-aware enough to know what's going to give the relationship sustainability for you. Because I also have that pattern where in the past, you know, I'm good at feeling compassion for somebody's pain. And, you know, so for me, if there was lust and chemistry and then somebody kind of showed me her vulnerability, that was the combination that would usually make me kind of fall in love. But I learned that combination alone, lust and somebody having pain, is not sustainable in and of itself. Yeah. So, you know, whether you know, well, I'm an introverted bookworm, or I'm somebody that wants to parasail around the world, or, you know, I'm somebody that really values conscious communication and going to personal growth workshops and spiritual development, and it's going to help if she has that. You know, I think some of those pieces, just like really being clear, you know, sometimes we have this idea, this romantic idea that, you know, love is all it takes. Mm-hmm. Love is enough, or mm-hmm. love should be mm-hmm. enough. And love is great, but a relationship also takes compatibility and you know, shared vision. Is that there has to be enough there, like day in and day out, to make you want to do it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
So, so I would just really look, I guess, to bring it back to your question, I would really look at, you know, refining your vision, making sure that you feel like you are worthy of having your vision, You can stick to your vision. You're not going to give it up just because you see somebody's potential.
And also notice, if you go back in time and look at your other relationships, notice what red flags were there that you might, you know, that you might have missed that maybe became more obvious later on.
Yeah. And then once you're actually in a relationship, I mean, assuming that you feel like, you know, you did choose well and there is compatibility, but the main issue is just this kind of process of disenchantment. Then there's work that we do with couples and, you know, that we would be able to talk to you about, where you're consciously continuing to grow your intimacy and build intimacy. Because I think the first few months in a relationship, it's like, all you want to do is look at her and touch her and hear about her life. But after a while, many of us start kind of putting the relationship on the back burner. And it's okay to not have the focus. It's healthy to not have the focus be on the relationship all the time. But we have some practices that we use in our relationship regularly so that we keep getting to know each other more and more deeply as we keep changing. And it's really cool because those practices also help us keep getting to know ourselves more and more deeply.
Yeah.
So it feels like the relationship is not static at all. Then we, you know, co-creating is also a really cool thing to do. We co-created Conscious Girlfriend. That brought a lot of extra factors to our relationship.
It did.
So
Lisa made the addendum to say that the kids are grown.
Ah, okay.
So that's an interesting question. The thing about most important is really an interesting sort of thing. I think many people have this idea or think about, well, what's most important? You know, is a relationship more important than my work, or more important than the grown kids, or more important than my travel around the world? And I think that that's an individual decision, an individual choice about what's most important in my life for each of us. What are my priorities? And it could be they have two, you know, this relationship and something else. I mean, it could be that you focus on more than one thing, but I think coming to understand for yourself what's most important for you and where you want to put your focus.
And how it looks. Like, you know, if your grown kids live nearby and you spend a lot of time with them every week or every month, you know, just being clear about that. Yeah. Like, hey, this is part of the structure of my life. And I don't think it's really that different than, you know, let's say you're an artist or a writer or an entrepreneur. And you say to somebody, hey, you know, I need, you know, substantial amounts of time alone every week because I do this thing, you know, this art or this business. So again, it's just being clear.
Yes.
And part of the assessment process in the conscious dating is really checking out that the other person doesn't just say, oh yeah, yeah, it's all fine with me. It's all fine with me. But from an insincere place,
right?
But really checking out that she's deeply okay because she has her own art or her own family or her own friends, or, you know, this kind of relationship is fine. You know, there's just about everything that any of you might ask about would be an issue for somebody and not an issue for somebody else.
Yes.
So it's all workable as long as you're clear, and then you find somebody else for whom it works. So somebody says she had to realize that romance is just a part of your life. You have to look at all the bits and pieces to make yourself happy. You can't rely on just romance to make you happy in life.
That is true.
And Sarah says she did ignore some red flags. And in the other case, she thinks she did just need to work on continuing to build intimacy. Yeah, that makes sense.
And it's good that you know that, and because those are actually skills that we talk about in the 12-week class, build skills to build intimacy.
And paying attention to red flags. So for those of you that do want more support, once again, the next 12-week class is starting in late January, January 27th.
This
is the URL. But we encourage you not to wait till the last minute to sign up, because there are only 25 spots.
Actually, there are only 19 slots.
Okay. So 6 of them are taken.
Yes.
Okay. So, so we would love to have you sign up. If you have questions about it, you can email us or, you know, get in touch. And otherwise, we recommend the book. We're going to be doing another teleclass on January 4th, right? And for those of you in the San Francisco area, we're going to be doing a free four-hour workshop on January 3rd.
In San Francisco, right?
Yeah. So stay tuned for that. It's been such a pleasure spending this time with you.
And we wish you all a very happy new year, because it's the end of the year. I can't quite believe it.
Yeah. Oh, and happy solstice.
And happy solstice. Yes, indeed.
Anybody have any last minute questions?
We'll take one more. One more little.
Part of my vision is going to be autonomy. All right. Great.
Thank you.
We're the standard bearers for that,
yes,
for sure.
Yes, we are.
Somebody says we rock. Thank you. We appreciate that. Yeah. You rock too.
Thank you.
Yes. Any other comments or questions before we say goodnight? If someone's not ready to date yet, I'm guessing it's too early to take the class.
No. That's a great question. No, if you're not ready to date, it's a great time to take the class. It's actually the perfect time to take the class.
Yeah, yeah. Getting ready is not something that happens all by itself. And I love what Susan said earlier about that. Like, she realized she wasn't ready, and so she, you know, took the nonviolent communication class, and she read Eckhart Tolle, and there was something else she said she did. I forget what it was. You know, those were all ways of potentially getting ready, and now maybe there's some additional pieces. And so the 12-week class is a way of getting ready, or getting ready to get ready. So sometimes women say, you know, if I just went through a breakup and I know I'm not ready, should I take the class? We would say yes, if you're drawn to it, because it will help you heal from the breakup. It'll help you come to terms with what happened, get a greater understanding about what happened. It'll speed up your healing process and make your healing process smoother. So you don't have to be ready to date in order to take the class at all. Great question.
And then someone asks, is there anything in the class that isn't in the book? There's a lot in the class that isn't in the book. I mean, the book can only, you know, it's only a subset of what we talk about.
Yeah. There's some stuff in the book that's not in the class as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of overlap, but they're different.
And also, you get a copy of the book if you take the class.
Right, right. With the class, we give you a lot of audios. Each week for the 12 weeks, there's about an hour's worth of audios of our talking. You can tell we like to talk, especially me. So there's a lot that, you know, that we relay kind of anecdotally and conversationally, and we share stories from our relationship, different stories than the ones in the book. And then there's a lot of exercises in the class. Mm-hmm. So they're practices for you to do.
And then there's a 2-hour group coaching call that's every other week. So there's seven of those.
And all kinds of questions come up in that call. And of course, we do little bits of coaching in the call. So yeah, so there is a lot in the class that's not in the book. Yeah. And it's a different sort of process. But you know, if you're not able to take the class for some reason, you will certainly also get a lot from the book. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
Well, so we could go on forever. It's fun, but you probably have other things to do. So we hope to see you again on another teleclass, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Be well. And we will make a copy of the recording of this class available too, so you can share it with your friends or listen again if you choose. Okay. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.